This program is sponsored by Blazing Grace Ministries.
This radio program is PG-13. Parents strongly caution some material may be inappropriate for children under the age of 13. Send me free. Jesus' mission was to comfort those who mourn, bind up the brokenhearted, proclaim liberty to captives, and open prison doors for those who are bound. For those who want more than status quo Christianity has to offer, Blazing Grace Radio begins now. And here is your host, Mike Janung.
Hey, Mike Janung here, and welcome back to Blazing Grace Radio. Thank you for joining us on this battlefield we call life. And I'm going to begin by reading a news article here. It says, a researcher at the Netherlands-based investigative outlet Bellingcat recently discovered that X users, formerly Twitter, were using the platform's AI chatbot, Grok, to undress women in photos that they had uploaded to the platform. And while the bot rejects prompts that asks to make people entirely nude, it's willing to walk right up to the line of non-consensual sexual imagery. Users who replied to images of women and requested that Grok remove her clothes received an in-thread reply with an image of the woman in lingerie or a bikini, and occasionally Grok replied with a link to a separate chat containing the image. Grok was developed by xAI and released in November 2023. Elon Musk is the owner of both xAI and X. So this is something you want to be aware of, ladies, if you have a Twitter or an X account, that this is very real and this is going on and this is where AI is taking us. And we have talked about AI boyfriends and girlfriends on this broadcast. This is a very real thing going on right now. And I mentioned before that upwards of 30% of our youth now see AI boyfriends and girlfriends as a preferred relationship to the real thing because there's no work in it and they'll just give them whatever they want. So be aware of this. And this is one thing we do to hopefully equip you to understand the reality of the world we're living in. So as some of you know, I'm into my fourth year with long COVID, and there are times when I get low on energy or just feeling worse than usual. And I discovered that having a vitamin IV or an IV with vitamins and a cocktail of other compounds helps sometimes. It gives me a boost to my energy and to my immune system. And along the way, I met a woman named Celeste McKinney, and she administers those. She comes to the office. This is a mobile service. And over the years, I've talked to her about the Rogue Christian and what we do and found out she's a believer too. And so one thing led to another. She shared a couple pieces about her story, and I was like, wow, I got to get her on the radio. So Celeste McKinney is a registered nurse and a mother of a 13-year-old son who lives here in Arizona. At a young age, she went through the devastating trauma of having a parent commit suicide. She came to Christ at the age of 12, and after a period of wandering in the seductions of the world, Celeste rededicated her life to the Lord and hopes to continue to help others. So, Celeste, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike. Thank you so much for having me. I'm grateful to be here. A little nervous, but that's okay. I felt that, you know, God called me to do this, and I wanted to to show up. And so, so my life, I've lived a hard life and I've lived a good life, you know, both. I came from a really big family. My dad's the oldest of 13 and I'm one of seven. And, you know, both of my parents were addicts and alcoholics. And so we were collateral damage in that situation. So growing up with my mom, my dad had divorced her when I was 1 year old. and she always struggled with addiction and alcohol and men, always looking for, you know, something to make her whole, something to make her happy, something to fill the voids that she had in her life. And, you know, unfortunately, we kind of got drug along in those, you know, experiences. So when I, you know, when things got hard, my mom or my dad would drop us off at different relatives' houses. So we were always kind of, you know, dropped off at an aunt's house or an uncle's house or at a friend's house, whoever could, you know, take care of us for 3 months or whatever, how long it was. And I remember going to live with my aunt and my uncle in Bastrop, Texas. And, you know, me and my sister were terrified. And, you know, they lived out in the woods and they would pray and they would cast out demons from us and tell us that, you know, that we needed to repent and things of that nature.
Your parents were doing this?
Or? No, my aunt and uncle.
Oh.
But they meant well. And that was just, you know, their way of trying to teach us about God.
So was that kind of freaking you out to hear this kind of thing at a young age?
Yes, it was. And they were speaking in tongues, and we had just never, you know, been around that type of thing before. Anyways, we tried to resist. We would hide in the house when it was time to go to church, and my uncle would come through the house and find us, and then we'd go to church. With that being said, that was probably one of the best things that ever happened to me because, you know, when I did go to church one day, everybody was praying and, you know, I started praying and I just remember this, you know, warm feeling come over me. It was almost like somebody, I know this sounds weird, but it's the feeling I had, like somebody had dumped like this warm oil all over me. And I just felt this comfort and this peace like I had never felt in my life. And I knew that was Jesus. I felt that with everything, you know, inside of me. And so that's where I truly first had that experience that I know that there's something, you know, a greater power, something that, you know, that I wanted to be a part of, something that I wanted to find out more about. I wasn't exactly sure, you know, how I was going to do that or how to do that, but I know that's where it all started. And so then as I went through my life, you know, at the age of 14, I was here in Arizona. We moved from Texas and I moved to be with my dad because my mom was just at that point. She was so far gone in her depression and, you know, her disease of alcoholism and drug addiction that I could no longer live with her, you know.
So what did that look like, her depression?
It just looked like her always dating men, always bringing, you know, different men home, just us having a lot of instability in our life, never knowing from one day to the next what was going to happen. She was okay with us sometimes partying, too, because that was her way of kind of, I guess, making it okay, you know, that she was doing those types of things. I don't know. And I remember her telling us that she'd rather us, you know, party there at the house with her than go somewhere else and get into trouble. Well, you know, as a kid, you think that's cool. But when you get older, you realize that that is very dysfunctional, you know. And so that's kind of, I think, where I probably started in my disease of addiction at that point. And I just didn't know that until later in life. So my sister was already with my dad in Arizona, and I decided to leave and to go and live with my dad as well. And so I did. And I still remember, you know, the day where I was working. I was a busser at Randy's in Scottsdale. And I got a phone call, and it was my boyfriend, and he said, your mom is dead. And I said, you know, I didn't know what to say. I think I screamed. That's all I could do. Yes, she had committed suicide. She had shot herself in the chest with a shotgun, and my sister found her. And so at that point, I just remember everything just, I just was numb. I was numb to anything and everything in my life, and I, I was angry. I was very, very angry. And I just remember thinking that I didn't want to live at that point. And And so I became very destructive in my life, and I began hanging around with the wrong people, you know, doing the wrong things, engaging in the wrong, you know, activities and doing drugs, and just became very self-destructive at that point.
What kind of drugs?
Cocaine, marijuana, cigarettes, alcohol. Yeah. So, and then, you know, went on to do that for the until I was about probably 24 years old. And so, and then I had a series of, you know, getting into trouble with law enforcement. And, you know, today I'm grateful for that because that's what brought me to my knees and brought me to that surrender of, okay, you know, I can't do this anymore. I need to do something different. And so at that point, I was mandated to court and to do a program called TASC, you know, and I did that and I was successful with that. And I went into a halfway house and I got sober. And eventually I became an assistant manager at that house. And I did, you know, really well, you know, what I was supposed to be doing. But I did stumble along the way a couple of times, and I ended up staying in program AA and NA for about 20 years total. So, yeah.
So you started the journey to recovery in your mid-20s?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, they told me in the program that if I was an addict, I was probably an alcoholic as well. And so I just said, okay. And I, you know, at that point, I was just trying to do, you know, what I thought was right. And I had come to know Jesus, you know, as my Savior. And I was just trying to live a better life, you know. Mm-hmm. And so through that, I stayed in the program for 20 years. And I did a lot of good things in that time. You know, I became a nurse. I got married. I had my son, who's 13 now. And I'm very, I guess, proud, you know, of the person that I am today. And I really know that I couldn't have done that had I not gotten sober and had I not come to Jesus Christ. Mm. So
how have you recovered and healed from the devastation of what happened with your mother?
Well, through therapy, through prayer, through, of course, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I think, too, through my profession, through being a nurse and, you know, just hearing a lot of different stories, you know, whether the person was rich or poor, it didn't really matter. It's like we're all people and we all have hardships. We all have tragedies in our life, you know, and being a hospice nurse, I think, was one of the greatest things that I've ever done in my life, and one of the best jobs as a nurse that I've ever had. Because to sit there at somebody's bedside, you know, when they're dying, and to hear, like, their life story and to hear the things that they loved doing or the things that they regretted, you know, and I think a lot of times the biggest regrets were is that they worked too much and they didn't spend enough time with their family. You know, you hear that a lot. Mm. But it didn't, like I said, it didn't matter, like, how much money they had or how little they had. It's like when we die, it's all the same. We're all dying, you know, alone. And so I guess to sit there and be with that person, it was a special time. You know, just like birth is a special time, I think death is a very special time as well. Mm. So I felt like it was a privilege, it was an honor to be there at their bedside.
So with your mom, what did it look like? Healing looked like forgiveness, release, processing, grieving, all the above?
Yeah, so grieving is what I learned is not linear. It's circular, you know, and it just goes in different stages. And it was a lot of anger, a lot of anger, which is where all of my destruction came from. I was so mad at her for leaving us. And at the time, at a young age, I didn't understand. I didn't understand how much pain she was in. Mm. And today I understand that. And I think as a young person, you know, she was my best friend. And I thought, how could she leave us? How could she, you know, not want to be with us? How could we not be the most important thing in her life? And it's just that she was so removed, you know, from God, I think, through her addictions and through her depression. But she always, no matter how, you know, far gone I thought she was, she always tried to pull us in to know God. She always tried to take us to church. She did. She took us to church. She read from the Bible. She prayed with us a lot. And those are the things that I will never forget, is that, you know, I thought she was going to hell because she committed suicide. So I really struggled with that for a long time. And that kept me, I think, separated from God, because I felt that how could a God that was so loving and understanding and compassionate send her to hell, you know, when I felt that she had already been in hell, I guess, here on earth. So that was a big reason, I think, why I stumbled a lot and I stayed away from God, because I was, you know, angry, really, really angry. But through grieving and through getting sober and through learning, you know, how to process all of this, I started figuring out, like, what could I do to give back? What could I do to help others who are struggling, you know, as kids that lost their parent? And so I went to Good Samaritan, and I did, I used to go there and do meetings on the suicide ward. And I would talk about my experience with being, you know, a child of suicide, a survivor. And, you know, I just always hoped, and I don't know to this day, but I had people tell me that through sharing my story there, that they had really, that it had helped them to see the effect of suicide and what that would look like for their children and for their families. You know, like, it's devastating. It's something that ripples out so far, you know, to your family and to your community, that it's just, you know, I guess they just don't think about that at the time. But I, you know, I did have a couple people tell me, thank you so much for sharing that. That really helped me to see a different side, you know, a different perspective on what that would look like and how that would affect my children. So,
so what the anger was, did it spill into anger at God? And how did you resolve that?
It did. Yeah, I totally did.
And I bring this up because in the church, you know, sometimes the attitude is like, oh, we can't be mad at God. But if you read the book of Job, he's just like, why did you do this to me, man? I lost 10 kids in one day and lost my business. And now my health has gone down. And so,
yeah.
How did you cope? How did you resolve it?
Well, I mean, yeah, of course, I was angry. I was, you know, I would tell God that I was angry. You know, my dad was an alcoholic, so he wasn't really around to try and help with that situation. But the saving grace for me, the way I coped with it, is that I had extended family that always took us in. And, you know, where the need was, they were always there to help. And like my aunt, she's like my mom. She's a school teacher, and she had 3 kids of her own, and she was poor, and she lived in New Mexico. And my dad would drop us off there and say that he would be right back, and then he wouldn't come back for like 3 or 4 months. But she would feed us, and she would take care of us, and she had nothing. And I asked her one day, I said, you know, how did you make this work with 3 kids of your own and then having us there too? And she said, well, I just loved you so much. And, you know, she's a believer in Christ. And she said, we just ate whatever we had. We had beans, we had rice, we had tortillas, we had, you know what I mean? Like, she just made it work. And so I believe that having that extended family, you know, is what really saved us, because they really stepped up to the plate after my parents were not able to, you know, care for us.
So Jesus was skin on.
Jesus was there the whole time. Yeah. He never left. Yeah. It's me that would, you know, leave and separate, because probably shame of what I was doing in my life, shame of using and, you know, being destructive. And I felt too ashamed to go to him and, you know, at times to say I was sorry, or, you know, forgive me, or, you know. And also, I think there were times where I didn't want to stop. I didn't want to stop those destructive behaviors, so then I wouldn't go to him, because I didn't mean it, you know. And so there came a point in my life where I surrendered, and I, you know, I still remember that day. I was homeless, And I was only homeless for one day, but I was homeless. And I fell to my knees and I just said, God, I said, please help me. Like, I'm willing to do anything. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm willing to do whatever you ask of me. And that was like the turning point in my life.
And that brings up a good point, because we've seen a lot of people who come to us for help that until you really want help, it's not going to happen. But also sometimes a wife will ask me, when is my husband going to change? And I tell her, well, oftentimes it's when we've had enough pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We've had enough.
Yeah. And I had a lot of pain. I also just came to the point to where I realized that my mom was a person. She was a human being, and she was fallible, and she did the best, I believe, that she could at the time. I believe that she did the best that she knew how to do. And even in her pain and depression and everything she was going through, she still managed to, you know, bring us to God when she could. Mm-hmm. And so for me as a parent, that's, you know, that's what I try to do, or that's what I do with my son, you know. So that's how I got through it. Just, I guess, in growing up and, you know, praying for wisdom and, you know, that's how I recovered. Just, you know, learning about Jesus and like how to be in the Word and, you know.
And so it sounds like, I'll use these words, maybe God used your pain to bring redemption and help to other people.
No, I hope so.
With sharing your story?
Yeah.
From what you've said in hospice? And because what I'm connecting the dots with is now you're working with people who are at the very edge of life.
Mm-hmm.
That's a critical place.
Right.
You've seen how we can't play games with these issues, and we need to go where people are suffering. Is that it?
Yeah. Yeah, I believe that that's true. And, you know, to your point of when people are ready to change, you know, they will, but it's like for me, I couldn't keep doing the same things over and over and over and asking God to forgive me. It's like I had to make a change. It's like I had to lay these things down and quit living for the world and just start, you know, living for God. And that means like denying ourselves of pleasures, things that we want in life but that aren't good for us, you know, and that Jesus says these things are not good for you and, you know, you need to stop doing this. And so that's where I had to get in my life, where I was like, okay, I'm ready to lay it down. I'm ready to, you know, lay down these things that I find pleasurable but that are not good to me or good for me, you know.
Well, I'm sure some of those pleasures were the alcohol and the drugs and all of that. Are there some other pleasures outside of that you had to let go of?
Well, I mean, you know, vanity, like just things, material things, you know, chasing money, success, thinking that all of those things, like my mom did, like how she went through men, thinking that, okay, this man is going to be the one. He's finally going to make me happy. You know, those things don't make us happy. You know, when we live in the Word and when we are having that relationship with Jesus and we do deny ourselves, that's when we start seeing the miracles come, you know, like the Bible, the things that we're reading. That's when we start seeing those promises in our life. And but it's hard to get to that point because you're so used to, like, living that way. You're so used to chasing money and success and, like, doing, you know what I mean? And, like, just having parties and having fun and, oh, let's go on trips and look at me. And that's not what it's all about. It's just about, you know, and I'm not saying you live a dull life, you know, like. I mean, it sounds dull to some people, but like being a Christian and living, you know, the way God wants you to, it's just, there's a lot of joy in that. And you have to get to that point where you're willing to lay those things down in order to get to the other side to see that.
So it should be up on a pulpit, what you just said. So 30 seconds. Talk to the person considering suicide right now.
So I would say, you know, if you're considering suicide, I've been there. I have felt what it's like to be in that dark place. And, you know, I'm just, I don't know, it's really hard. I wish that my mother had not done it, you know, had not committed suicide. But I don't know. I don't know if everything happens for a reason or if I don't think that that was God's plan for her at all. that I just wish that I could have maybe done something else to help her, but I was a child. Mm. I think that's a lot of where my grief and anger came from, too.
Well, thank you, Celeste, and we're going to continue this conversation next week. So thank you for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time. Do you want to be free?
Blazing Grace is a nonprofit international ministry for the sexually broken and the spouse. Please visit us at blazinggrace.org for information on Mike Janung's books, groups, counseling, or to have Mike speak at your organization. You can email us at email@blazinggrace.org or call our office in Chandler, Arizona at 719-888-5144. Again, visit us at blazinggrace.org. Email us at email@blazinggrace.org or call the office at 719-888-5144.
This program was sponsored by Blazing Grace Ministries.